Welcome to Total Health Transformation Podcast, hosted by Dr. Danny Scarhill. Dr. Danny is a doctor of chiropractic, an author, speaker, and trainer. And on the THT podcast, he interviews other health experts to glean further insights that will help you achieve total health transformation.
Welcome to the Total Health Transformation Podcast. My name's Dr. Danny Scarhill, the founder of DannyScarhill.com, the author of Total Health Transformation, the proven system to unlock limitless energy, motivation, and health, and the creator of the Total Health Transformation programs. Let's get straight into it on this episode.
I've got a fantastic guest joining us today. It's Dr. Bruce Lipton. He's a stem cell biologist, author of many, many books, best-selling author of Biology Belief, and more recently, he wrote The Honeymoon Effect. He's also the recipient of the 2009 GOI Peace Award. His discoveries ran counter to the established scientific view that life is controlled by the genes, one of today's most important fields of study, the science of epigenetics. Bruce is an internationally recognized leader in bridging science and spirit. He's been a guest speaker on hundreds of TV and radio shows, as well as a keynote presenter for national and international conferences. He was also starred in many films and documentaries, as well as including the hit What the Bleep Do We Know? Without further ado, welcome to the call, Dr. Bruce Lipton.
Danny, thank you so very much for this opportunity, because I so appreciate what you're doing to help people get on their feet and take back power of their lives. And this has been the essence of the biology that I've been working on for the last 40 or so years.
Excellent stuff. So let's hear a little bit about your journey, Bruce. What led from when you started to where you are now? How did it pan out?
Well, Danny, about 40 some years ago, I was trained as a developmental biologist working on cells. And at the same time, I also got a job teaching medical students at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine. What was really wonderful about this was that while I was teaching the medical students about how genes control life, which is the conventional belief that most people in the world have come to understand, that the genes that we inherited determine our traits and characteristics, I was teaching this concept, which was actually called genetic determinism, the belief that at the moment of conception, the set of genes you get from your mother and your father predetermine character of your life, your biology, your behavior, things like that. So I'm teaching that as a conventional awareness to medical students. And at the same time, I was doing research on muscular dystrophy, which included cloning stem cells. And what was really interesting was this was when I was cloning stem cells the first time, was 47 years ago, before people even really in the world understood the nature of stem cells. I had a unique opportunity of working with them, and not only working with them, but cloning them. And what that really means is I'd take one stem cell and put it in a petri dish. And just to let the audience know, what is a stem cell? It's an embryonic cell. And all of our bodies are filled with embryonic cells for a very important reason, and that is every day we lose hundreds of billions, that's a number that's like hard to even conceptualize. Hundreds of billions of cells die every day just from natural aging or trauma or some kind of damage. And that is every day of our lives. Well, the issue about that is if you're losing hundreds of billions of your cells every day, obviously you have to replace them. And the question is, well, where do the new cells come from? And the answer is stem cells. And I said, well, what is a stem cell? So to give you an insight to that very simply, is if I would get a tissue sample from a fetus the moment before it's born, and then I could show you in a microscopic slide, I say, oh, here's a what we call an embryonic cell. And then I say, wait until the fetus is born. A few minutes later, the fetus is born. I take the same biopsy, show you the same slide with the same cell under it, and I say, now it's called a stem cell. And it's a very simple reason is once you're born, I legitimately can't call it an embryonic cell anymore. You're no longer an embryo. So we changed the name from embryonic cell to stem cell, but the meaning of it is important. It's a cell with multipotential, and these are the cells that are used to replace the cells that we lose every day. So I'm growing These multipotential cells, actually, I put one of them in a petri dish by itself. It divides every 10 or 12 hours. After about a week, I've got like 50,000 cells in the petri dish. But what's most important is that all of the cells are derived from the same parent cell. So by definition, all the cells are genetically identical. Now, here's where the experiment becomes very interesting. Cells grow in a culture medium, in a laboratory. And a culture medium is the biologist's effort to make an environment that is similar to the environment in the organism from which the cells come. Basically, just simply, inside your body, cells live off the blood, which is the nutritional medium that is being transported throughout your body. And blood is what bathes the cells. So in a laboratory, we try to make culture medium that best matches the contents of that blood so that the cells are growing in an environment as close as we can make it to the environment inside the body. So we make culture medium. What I did in my experiment is I changed some of the composition of the culture medium and I created three different versions of the culture medium. But here's the story. I go to my stem cell dish, take some of the cells out, put it into, let's say, dish A with environment A, meaning a culture medium that has a slightly different chemistry than the one that the cells grew up in, and the cells form muscle. I say, go back to the very same stem cell dish, take out some more cells from that dish, put it into culture dish B with a different environment. I change the chemistry a little bit, and the cells form bone. I say, no, wait, go back to the main stem cell dish, take some more stem cells out, put them into environment C, a different culture medium, and the cells form fat cells. Well, you're left with a very important question, and the question is, what controls the fate of the cells? Well, the first thing we have to recognize is all the cells were genetically identical. So you can't start with the premise that genes control the fate of the cells because all the cells have the very same genes in them. So the question is, what controlled the fate of cell? And the answer is the environment that the cells are growing in, the culture medium that the cells are growing in. And this is profoundly different than the story I was teaching medical students that genes were controlling this. It turns out the environment was controlling the fate of the cells. And why that becomes profoundly important for us, Danny, is the very simple understanding, and it's this. When people say genes control your life, genetic determinism, then think about it this way. As far as we know, we didn't pick the genes we came with. If you don't like the traits or characteristics, you just can't go out and change the genes. And then you start to realize, well, your life is being controlled by these genes. And you had nothing to do with picking them or changing them. So in a real sense, genetic determinism is a belief in victimization. I am a victim of my heredity. In other words, if there's cancer running in my family and I get the gene, then I'm going to get the cancer or heart disease or whatever disease you want to talk about. Well, that's what I was programming medical students with. However, the research with the stem cells revealed, no, the environment is responsible for affecting the activity of the genes. And I say, well, why is that important? And then all of a sudden you realize, I can change my environment. I can change my perception of the environment. And as a result, I can change the fate of my cells. And then all of a sudden I say, oh my goodness, while I'm teaching in medical school, teaching students there that genes control life, in the laboratory, my stem cells were revealing a completely different story. They were saying that the environment controlled life. And since I can change the environment, since I can control the environment, then no longer am I a victim of my genes because I can create and alter my environment. I become a master of my genetic activity. So really the new biology that springs from this is called epigenetics. And epigenetics simply means, let's put it this way. When I was teaching the medical students, I was teaching genetic control, which simply means control by genes. The new science is called epigenetics, and epigenetic control means something totally different. Epigenetic control, and recognize this, that little prefix epi means above. So when I say epigenetic control, I am literally saying control above the genes. And this is a revolution. Because if the genes control us, we're victims. But if the control is above the genes, then all of a sudden it says, then we can manipulate that environment and we can control our own health. And so this is just a wonderful revolution in biology because it takes them to masters. And I actually ended up after accomplishing this research, I walked out of the university because the textbooks were still teaching genes control life. And I realized that I didn't want to perpetuate this myth. It was totally wrong. I left the system. And then later I came back and I ended up at Stanford University School of Medicine, where I performed more experiments, a little bit more advanced than I did at Wisconsin, and came to not only the exact same conclusion, but even more insight into the nature of how powerful we are in controlling our biology.
That's fascinating, Bruce. And I can resonate with an awful lot of that, because as a chiropractor, it comes up almost on a daily basis. Patients say to me, well, my mum had cancer, so I'm going to have cancer, etc., etc. And I said, whoa, stop right there. It's not to do with your genes, it's to do with your environment. So I completely resonate with that, Bruce.
Spot. Yeah, it's Danny, it's more important because when a patient says that, then there's this little insidious problem that when they say it, and here's the reason. So first of all, let's just say, okay, you say, well, Bruce, that was really nice. You were working with cells in a plastic culture dish. What the heck does this have to do with me as a human being? How do I relate the two? Well, this is most critical because of this simple reason. When we look in the mirror and see ourselves, Danny, we see one human being looking back, and I go, well, that's one organism. I go, well, that's not a correct interpretation for a simple reason. A human body is made out of about 50 trillion cells. The cells are the living entity. So when I talk about a human body, it's not a single thing. It's a community of 50 trillion cells. The cells are the living entity. Me, Bruce, or you, Danny, by definition, that's a community. So when I say Bruce, I'm referring to a community of 50 trillion cells under my skin. So the joke is very interesting, is that a human body is the equivalent of a skin-covered Petri dish with 50 trillion cells inside. But the relevance is critical because I said, well, the culture medium is called blood. And therefore, when you change the composition of the culture medium, as demonstrated in the plastic dish, when you change the composition of the culture medium, you change the fate of the cells. So the culture medium, blood, is really where the information comes from that controls our biology. And now I go, well, why is this relevant? Then I say, well, the chemical composition of the blood, when you change it, is really because of the brain releasing chemistry into the blood. The brain is the chemist. And in the plastic Petri dish, you change the chemistry of the culture medium, the equivalent of blood, you change the fate of the cells. I go, no difference in a human body. I have 50 trillion cells. I have culture medium called blood, and the brain is the chemist that is controlling the composition of the culture medium. And then I add one last factor because I say, well, what chemicals should the brain put into the blood? And the answer is, what do you believe or what do you perceive? For the simple reason is your mind is the source of what chemicals should be released into the body. I'll give a simple example, Danny. If you are sitting there and you open up your eyes and right in front of you is someone you love, the mind interpreting love causes the brain to release chemistry such as dopamine for pleasure, vasopressin, which increases our health and our attractiveness, growth hormone, which enhances the growth and development of our cells. Chemicals like that are released in a mind that perceives love. And I say, why is that relevant? And the answer is this. If I take the chemicals released from a mind in love and put those chemicals into a culture dish, plastic dish with cells, the cells grow exuberantly well. And all of a sudden you realize, yes, when your mind perceives love, the chemistry that's put into your blood is chemistry that enhances growth. That's why people glow when they're in love. They got this health when they're in love. I say, yeah, because the culture medium is containing these chemicals that the mind is interpreting of love and releasing into the blood via the brain. I go, wait, now here's the difference. Same person opens their eyes and sees something that scares them, Well, they don't release the chemicals of love. When you're in fear or stress, you release stress hormones and inflammatory chemicals into the blood. And I go, well, why is that relevant? I say, simple. If I take the chemistry released by the brain where that mind is in fear and put that chemistry into a culture dish, guess what? The cells stop growing and they start to die. And that really is the realization that fear kills. And I say, why does it do that? Because the chemistry released by the brain into the blood, the culture medium, in fear is really chemistry for protection, which shuts down and walls off the cells to protect them. And so basically, it's all of a sudden you say, wow, that's called mind-body interaction. This is the biology and the science of mind-body. The mind makes an interpretation, causes the brain to release chemicals that match that interpretation. The chemicals are released into the blood, the culture medium, that feeds and controls the activity of your 50 trillion cells. So that's a long story to get back to the point that you talked about, like one of your patients saying, well, my family has cancer, and I feel that if I get this gene, I'm going to get the cancer. Then I say, what's the belief of that individual? The mind. Well, the mind is in fear about getting cancer. I say, well, why is that relevant? Because the mind will release chemistry that matches that perception. And so we can generate cancer, not from having any genes. We can generate cancer from having a belief about having genes, because the belief is going to translate into chemistry that will create the or match that particular belief. And so this becomes very critical when people are living in concern and fear, because just the belief of that will manifest the illnesses and the diseases. As a matter of fact, biologically, cancer is 10% related to heredity, 90% related to lifestyle and belief. And why this is important is because people think, oh, cancer, genes cause cancer. And the fact is, genes don't cause cancer. There is no cancer gene. The genes will associate with the chemistry of a mind that is not supporting it. That chemistry of the mind will activate a cancer gene, not the gene itself. We really have to understand that we have been led to believe that we are victims of the genes, but it turns out genes do not control anything. Here's a simple fact. A gene is a blueprint to make a body part called a protein. The protein molecules are the building blocks of the body. And I say, well, why is that relevant? I say, well, the gene is a blueprint to make these proteins. There are 100,000 different ones. I go, well, again, why is that relevant? And I go, well, it's a blueprint. You go, well, yeah. And I go, listen, go into an architect's office, and she's working on a blueprint, and you lean over her shoulder, and you ask her a simple question. You ask the architect, is your blueprint on or off? And she'd look at you like, well, what are you, crazy? There's no on and off to a blueprint. I go, precisely. We've been led to believe that genes turn on and off. And I go, no. Genes are blueprints. There's no on and off. What you really want to understand is, who's the contractor? Who's the one that selects the genes and selects the blueprints? And the answer, the mind. And all of a sudden you start to realize, oh my God, we've been programmed to be victims, and our beliefs are turned into our biology. If I believe I'm a victim, if I believe I'm going to get sick, if I believe that there's stress and there's no stress, my cells only respond to my belief because of the chemistry from that mind activating through the body in the blood is profoundly going to control the fate of our genes. So this is a revolution that takes us from the belief that genes control us, we're victims, to the fact that we control our genes.
That's absolutely fascinating, Bruce. And I mean, I've heard you talk about this a lot, but I would say the vast majority of the people on this planet haven't heard that yet. And they really need to do that. Is that one of your inspirations to do this work? Because from what I'm hearing, you're a man on a mission, Bruce.
I am on a mission for a very simple reason. My life when I was teaching conventional medicine, conventional belief about genes, my life was, I was successful professionally, health-wise, I wasn't, you know, like the top of anybody's list of anything, you know, socially, I could use a lot of help, and the whole idea was, at that time, it was sort of like, oh, that's just the fate of my life, you know, that's just the cards or the genes I've been dealt, and I have to live with this. Once I started to recognize that my perceptions and my beliefs change my genes, I completely changed my life and started to see how I had to rewrite beliefs and programs that we all get. We all developmentally are the recipients of programs about life, and those programs control our genes. But the problem is the programs that we get in our early development don't come from us. They come from our parents, our family, and our community, because as children, the first 7 years of our lives, we observe our family and our culture and community to understand how to become a human to fit into the community, you know. And why is this relevant? Because I say, well, Danny, how many things must a child learn to become a functional member of a family and a community? And you go, wow, hundreds and thousands of facts or behaviors have to be understood to be a successful member of a community. And I go, well, how do you teach an infant that large number of facts so that they grow up and have the programs to behave in accordance with the community? I go, here's the joke. You don't have to teach them. The brain of a child for the first 7 years is in a lower EEG vibrational frequency called theta, which is below consciousness. That's a vibration called alpha. Theta is imagination. Well, yeah, well, look at a kid between 2 and 7, and you realize the kid is living in the real world, but also mixing it with the imaginary world, because that's the operational state of the brain. But theta is a little more than imagination. Theta is hypnosis, and that's the important understanding. A child does not have to be taught like schoolroom teaching to learn how to become a member of a family and society. All they have to do is observe. They observe the mother, the father, the siblings, and the community. And through that observation and hypnosis, other people's behaviors are downloaded and become our behaviors. So the fact is, our subconscious minds, and that's where the programs are loaded with programs of how to behave and how to respond to life. And these programs didn't come from us with our conscious wishes and desires. They came from observing others. Now here comes the problem that is the biggest monkey wrench in lives on this planet. And it's the stuff that you're working with, Danny, trying to help people. You're trying to help them get out of their programming, because it turns out their subconscious programs control their lives. And you go, well, wait a minute. The mind has conscious and subconscious. And we talk about the mind. I say, yeah, the mind controls our biology. But I said, well, there's two parts, conscious mind and subconscious mind. Subconscious mind is the equivalent of a database of programs. It's downloaded. It's sort of like an old-fashioned jukebox where you push the button and you play the song. Every time you push the button, you play the same song over and over and over again. So the mind, the subconscious mind, is like programs that every time we engage a program, we play the program exactly over and over again. This is different than the conscious mind. The conscious mind is connected to our unique individual identity. The conscious mind is connected to our spirituality. The conscious mind is what makes us different than other people. The subconscious mind, that's just a record playback device. So the conscious mind is where you are. I go, why is it relevant? The conscious mind is creative. The subconscious mind is habitual, meaning I put a program in it. Every time I push a button, I play the same program. That's a habit. But the conscious mind is creative. The conscious mind, you, this unique identity, has wishes, desires, aspirations. What do you want? You want to lose weight. You want to be a better businessman. You want to be a healthier person. You want to create wonderful relationships. I go, oh, that's the wishes and desires of the conscious mind. That when the conscious mind's controlling life, that you're leading with those wishes and desires. And then here, the monkey wrench I talked about comes into play right here, Danny, and it goes like this. The conscious mind, in addition to being creative, is also capable of thinking. So a simple, you know, little experience right here. I say, Danny, tell me what you're doing on Friday. The moment I ask you that question, my mind starts to go into the TED, just, you know, like the little Rolodex, and say, oh, let's see, Friday, I'm doing this and that. And I go, here's the important part. When I asked you that question and your mind started to focus on it, by definition, your conscious mind stopped paying attention to the current moment, because now it was going back into thought. So here's a fact. Every time the mind, the conscious mind, is in thought, it's not paying attention. And the significance about that is, well, that doesn't mean you stop what you're doing. I mean, if you're walking down the street and you have a thought, you don't freeze and then wait for the thought to come and then go and then start walking again. Or you're driving your car and you have a thought, you don't stop the car and have a thought. What happens, and this is the part that I'm getting to that's critical, when the conscious mind is thinking, we default automatically to the subconscious program. So in other words, if you're walking down the street and you have a thought, the subconscious will allow you to continue walking while the conscious mind is busy having a thought. So then I say, well, why is this relevant? And now here comes the killer. Science has recognized that 95% of our life, 95% of the day, our conscious mind is in thought. Well, by definition, then, it says 95% of the day, your behavior is controlled by the programs in the subconscious, because that's the default control. Then I go, uh-huh. And the subconscious programs come from where? Mainly from other people. And all of a sudden you realize, well, wait a minute, that means 95% of the day I'm not operating from my conscious mind's wishes and desires. I'm operating from the programs in the subconscious, which came from other people. And I go, uh-huh. And the problem is, other people's behaviors don't answer what you want and your wishes and your desires and your aspirations. 95% of the day you're playing other people's behavior. And psychologists tell us 70% of that downloaded behavior that's in the subconscious mind is disempowering, limiting, self-sabotaging. And so it says 95% of the day we're not, you know, running our lives with our conscious wishes and desires. Our lives are being programmed by other people's behavior. In my lecture, Danny, I asked the audience a question, and it's kind of fun because almost everyone is aware of it. And I go, listen, I'm sure back in your earlier days, you were very close to a friend. You knew your friend's behavior very, very well. And you happen to know your friend's parent. And one day you see that your friend has some of the exact same behavior as their parent. And you volunteer very simply. You go, hey, you know, Bill, you're just like your dad. And then you back away from Bill. Bill goes totally ballistic and says, how can you compare me to my dad? And most people laugh over that. And I go, yeah, but this is the most profound story I can tell you for this reason. Everyone else can see that Bill behaves like his dad. He got the behavior from downloading it when he was an infant by observing his dad. But Bill doesn't see it. And I say, why? And the answer is, the only reason he's playing his dad's behavior is because his mind is in thought. So when his mind is in thought and he's playing his dad's behavior, he's the one that doesn't see it. Everybody else does. And everyone laughs and they understand that. And I go, yeah, but here's the issue. We are all Bill. Every one of us is playing 95% of our lives from the subconscious programs. Here's the fun part. There's a movie called The Matrix. Most everybody's seen that movie. And I say, well, when you go in the video store, where do you find The Matrix? I say, oh, look under science fiction. And I go, actually, no. The Matrix is a documentary. And the relevance about that is this. We've all been programmed. And I say, yeah, our subconscious minds were programmed for 7 years. And then 95% of our life comes from that program. So you go back to the movie and they say, listen, take the blue pill and go back into the program and life will be exactly the same as it's always been. Yeah, that's exactly what you played 95% of your life forever. That's it. But then they say, if you take the red pill, you get out of the program. And then I'm going to tell you this part because this is cool. Almost every one of us at some point in our life unknowingly took the equivalent of the red pill. That is, now here it is, when we fell in love with somebody, head over heels in love. Sometime, anytime during our life, we fell in love. It may have only lasted a few days or a week, but think about it this way. When we fell in love with that one person, and again, it's not duration, but we fell in love with somebody, and I ask these questions of people who have fallen in love, and I say, when you go back to the time you fell in love, were you healthy? And almost everyone says, yes, I was exuberantly healthy. And then I say, did you have energy? And we all laugh because we all know that when you fall in love like that, you make love for days without stopping for food or sleep. You got a lot of energy. And thirdly, the more important question, when you fell in love, was life so beautiful that you couldn't wait for the next day to have more? It was no matter how crappy your life may have been right up to the moment you meet this special person. Once you meet this special person for the next period of time, which I call the honeymoon, you're healthy, energized, and life is like heaven on earth. And I go, what's relevant about this? And here's what's relevant. Science has found out, how did we go from crappy life to heaven on earth? And the answer was this. Science has recognized that when you fall in love, it's the one time you keep your conscious mind present, and it's becoming what's called mindful. And the relevance of being mindful is that if you don't let your conscious mind wander, then your conscious mind controls your biology and your life. I say, yeah, but the conscious mind has your wishes and desires. I go, exactly. When you fall in love, you stay mindful. You stay in the conscious mind, you create from wishes, desires, and aspirations, and when two people are doing this together, what do they manifest? Wishes, desires, and aspirations. And that's why when people fall in love, they have heaven on earth. And then I say, but how come the honeymoon doesn't last? And here's the answer. The honeymoon is unique because it's two people coming together, creating life from their conscious minds. So there's two minds. Two people, two conscious minds. I say, but life goes on. Even if you're in love, you still have to pay the rent and fix a car and do the chores. And I say, oh, so at some point your mind gets busy about all these things you have to do. I say, why is that relevant? Because you're in the relationship, you're both operating from wishes and desires of the conscious mind, and all of a sudden you start to think about your work or something. The moment you start thinking, you default to the subconscious. I go, what's the relevance? Well, the subconscious has programs that don't represent you at all. They represent your mother, your father, your family, your community, whatever. And I say, why is that relevant? Because when your conscious mind goes into thought and you start playing subconscious programs, you introduce behavior into the relationship that's not really supportive of the relationship. And when both people are doing this, then what happens is we started the honeymoon with two conscious minds creating wishes and desires, but the honeymoon ends when four minds start playing. The two conscious minds are then supplemented by the two subconscious minds, and the subconscious minds are not us, they're other people. And when we introduce our subconscious programs, well, as I said, 70% of these are negative and disempowering programs. Well, when you start living from your subconscious mind like we do on a day-by-day basis, what created the honeymoon, the wishes and desires of the conscious mind, are no longer being exercised. And as a result, we're not creating from our wishes and desires. We're creating from the patterns of behavior that were downloaded into us. Yes, we indeed were programmed. And getting out of the program is the answer to creating health, happiness, relationships, job success, everything that we were looking forward to. Simple point, we were looking forward to it, meaning these are our wishes and desires. They manifest when you get out of the subconscious programming or rewrite the subconscious programming.
So you reckon the Beatles were right when they said all you need is love then, Bruce, yeah?
Excuse me, I didn't get that, Danny. Would you say that again, please?
So you reckon the Beatles were right when they said all you need is love?
Well, no, all you need is love and a change of subconscious programming.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you know, you see, this is the issue. You know, like your work involves, for example, losing weight. And I go, well, where's the problem losing weight? And I go, here's the problem. When a person wants to lose weight, that's a desire and a wish. I say, yes, that comes from the conscious mind. Then I say, yeah, but what's the problem? I say, yeah, but that mind only works 5% of the time. 95% of the time you're coming from the subconscious. I go, well, what's the problem then? I say, the weight is related to our subconscious programming. So, for example, if we needed protection because life wasn't happy or secure or very supportive when we were young, the biology says, oh, my God, the threat from the outside or the lack of support from the outside is not helping me. So people wall off the outside. I say, well, how do you wall off the outside? And the answer is you get thicker. The thicker you are, the harder it is for outside influences to penetrate the body. So the weight issue is predetermined by the subconscious mind because it's based on our life experiences. So now why is that a problem? I go, well, my conscious mind says, let's lose weight. And I go, yeah, okay, 5% of the day. Then I go, what about 95% of the day? I say, oh, 95% of the day, the subconscious mind is enforcing a program that says I need to be heavy. And I go, oh, there's the problem. The issue is, okay, I could work and try to keep my conscious mind really hard on the diet, keep my conscious mind working. And so even if I work really hard, I can lose some weight. And I go, yeah, but the moment you let go and the subconscious takes over, the subconscious will return the weight right back to the precept stage that was in the program. So if you want to lose weight, well, first, you have to have the conscious wish and desire to do that. But number two, you have to recognize you have to change the programming in the subconscious mind, or unconsciously, you'll return right back to the same weight setting you were at before. So losing weight, partly diet, but there's a psychological component that you have to deal with, and that is you really have to understand that you have to, at some point, change the belief system in the subconscious mind. And that's where the control comes from. And this is the real critical issue about why is it so hard to lose weight? And the answer is because you're only operating 5% of the time with the mind that has that desire.
How do we switch around the other way then, Bruce? So we can be more present and we can be using the conscious mind a lot more than most of us tend to do so.
Well, that's the answer, Danny. That's the whole idea, because the more you stay conscious, the more every decision and every behavior is totally controlled by wishes and desires. And that's where we want to go. And so the effort of trying to be mindful, there is a practice, or some people call it Buddhist mindfulness, is keeping the conscious mind present is absolute control. That is the reason why the honeymoon worked, because it was during that time when you meet that special person in your life, you don't let your mind wander for the simple reason what you wanted is in front of your face. So there's this period of time where it's like your conscious mind stays present because it's taking in everything that you wanted. And so we live that way. But busyness, as I said, forces us back into thinking, which then causes us to default back into the limiting programs. So one of the ways of taking control of your life is learning mindfulness. And another way, which I think is more important, is learning how to rewrite the subconscious programs to re-empower you rather than to live with these negative and disempowering and self-sabotaging behaviors that we acquired. And the biggest issue is, besides the fact that the two minds function differently, the conscious mind being creative, the subconscious being habitual, is that the two minds learn in completely different ways. And this has been another monkey wrench, because people say, well, if I just become aware of all this, then my mind will know stuff. And I go, the conscious mind learns in a creative way. The conscious mind learns like reading a self-help book, for example. And it's interesting, I have an audience. I say, okay, how many people in this room read a self-help book? And all the hands go up. And then I go, next question. How many people's lives have changed after reading the self-help books? And then a few hands remain up, but most of the hands go back down. And the reason is this. Reading a self-help book is educating the conscious mind, which is creative. It can learn from reading the book. The conscious mind can learn from going to a lecture. The conscious mind can learn from watching a video. The conscious mind can learn from, aha, I got it. And the conscious mind learns. I go, well, here's the problem. The subconscious mind does not learn that way. So we have a great ability to educate our conscious minds way high. God, I can I'm so intelligent in my conscious mind. You give me a quiz, I'll get 100 on the quiz. And I go, yeah, but do these conscious programs that you just educated, do they control your life? And I go back to the same story, only 5% of the time. And I say, well, what about the subconscious mind? I go, it does not learn that way. It's the habit mind. A habit mind does not want to change very quickly for a very simple reason. If you learned how to walk as an infant and now you have the program in the subconscious mind, that's why you don't have to think about walking. It's an automatic behavior. But if your subconscious mind was readily changeable, you could break a habit very fast, and many of the habits are too important. So the subconscious mind holds on to habits. And I say, well, how does it create habits? I go, there are three fundamental ways to write new programs in the subconscious mind. Number one, hypnosis. Yes, this is the primary way we got the programs in the first place. In the first 7 years of our lives, we were operating at a theta vibrational frequency, EEG, which is hypnosis. And so hypnosis is a way of doing that. And interestingly, one of the ways of writing new programs hypnotically is the use of subliminal tapes. As you go to bed at night, your vibrational activity of the brain goes from the higher vibration of consciousness into the lowest vibration, delta, which is sleep. But as the vibration goes from high to low, it passes through theta. So just as you're going to sleep and you're in this what's called twilight reverie, your brain is operating at theta. So if you put a pair of earphones on as you're going to sleep, as the brain is going through the theta phase, whatever is on the tape will unconsciously be downloaded into that subconscious. So that's one way of programming. However, that hypnotic programming occurs for the first 7 years of a child's life. I say, yeah, but after that, we can still create new, programs in the subconscious. I go, how do you do it? Habituation, practice. How long did it take you to learn ABCDs? You had to go A, B, C, D, and then you pause, and you go, E. Oh, A, B, C, D, E, F, and slowly repeating it and repeating it and repeating it. Finally, you get to Z. And once you finally get from A to Z and you get it, guess what? Now it's a program. You never have to learn it again. It's built into your mind. You've got the complete alphabet line. Or driving a car. You didn't know how to drive a car the first day you got in behind the seat, and you had to pay so much attention to everything, the gauges, the mirror, what's going on in the windows, outside the car, all these kinds of things. It's so much you had to pay a lot of attention. And then I say, yeah, but now you've been driving for a while. And guess what? You get in the car, you say, I'm going to go to the supermarket. Why is that relevant? You put the key in the car, you don't consciously pay attention to all the things to drive the car. Your subconscious knows how to do it. It's a program. So as you're driving the car, you're not paying attention to the details of driving. You have thoughts running through your head, or you could be having a conversation with somebody in the car. And I say, well, then who's driving the car? If your conscious mind is involved with the conversation, who's driving the car? And the answer is the subconscious mind. It's got the program how to drive. And the subconscious mind's a million times more powerful and extremely faster than the processing of the conscious mind. So, the subconscious mind is really cool. It can handle how we walk, how we talk, the car driving, the job we do. All of these become programs. So from first 7 years, we learn through hypnosis. After age 7, the primary way of learning is repetition. Habituation is created by repeating something over and over and over again. The more you repeat it, the more the program becomes intact. And those are the two primary ways conventionally of learning and rewriting subconscious programs. There's a third option now, which is relatively new, and it's called energy psychology. And it's a new belief of how to create programs using something called super learning, where you can download beliefs in a matter of minutes. And there's a whole variety of these different modalities that still have the same effect. As a matter of fact, on my website, brucelipton.com, there's a column of resources, which will list a 20 or 30 different belief change modifications. These are new ways of rewriting the subconscious. And what's really exciting about them is many of these processes can rewrite programs in a matter of 10 minutes. Behavioral program that has been sabotaging you your whole life, using some of these processes, you can rewrite that program in a matter of 10 minutes. And before I return it back to you, Danny, I'll just add one last thing about that. And the issue is, I was programmed, you were programmed, we were all programmed during the first 7 years of life with thousands of rules of how to behave. And I say, well, do I know what these behaviors are? I mean, look, I was being programmed when I was 1 year old. I can't consciously go back and tell you what the heck the program was when I was 1 year old. So there's the idea is, well, most of my subconscious programming, I don't know what it is. I didn't see it because it happened before I was even conscious. So the question is, how can I tell what my programs are? And then the wonderful answer, Danny, is this. 95% of our life comes from the subconscious. Consequently, our life is the printout of our subconscious programs. And I go, why is that relevant? And all I have to tell you is simply this. Everything that comes into your life easily, things that you don't have to work hard at, things that just show up in your life, are there primarily because you have programs in your subconscious that encourage them to be there. In contrast, anything you work hard at, anything you struggle over, anything you have to put a lot of effort into, anything that you have to sweat and work at, why are you working so hard toward these goals? The answer inevitably is you have programs in the subconscious that do not support these goals, and that's why you're trying to overcome these programs of limitation, and that's why you have to put in so much effort. And the issue about that is then, oh my God, then you don't have to go to a psychologist or a psychiatrist to understand your subconscious programming. You just look at your life. And this allows you then to find out what parts of your life you want to change. And the answer is simply this. What are those things that you are trying to acquire or get to that you have trouble getting there? And I will immediately say that that nation is not supported by a program. So, right, you know, the program you want to change is the program directly connected to that. And so, therefore, you don't have to search your entire subconscious database. You can just say, oh, look, I'm having trouble making money. And the answer is, well, in that particular case, your program doesn't support you making money. As a matter of fact, you mentioned on your website, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki, who wrote that book, and what was the concept of that? And he said, if you come from a rich family, you have a tendency to stay rich no matter what. And if you come from a poor family, no matter how much you struggle to make money, there's a tendency to stay poor. And I say, well, why is that? And the answer is simply this. If you grew up in a rich family, you were subconsciously programmed to have money, the behaviors that will keep your money. If you grew up in a poor family, you were programmed with beliefs that prevent you from having money. Since 95% of your life comes from your subconscious, then the subconscious of a person from a rich family will unconsciously lead them to money. And in contrast, the subconscious programs from a child growing up in a poor family will unconsciously sabotage them in their efforts to make money. And that's a wonderful example of how programming determines the fate of your life.
That's a fantastic whole concept you were talking about there, and those three different ways of reprogramming your subconscious will be, you know, massively valuable to so many people. It made me think of, I was doing a workshop yesterday for some of my patients, and a patient says to me, I'm not taking away from the work that you do as a chiropractor, Danny, but couldn't this whole thing be the placebo effect in action with my healing? And I said, you know what? It could be. What's your take on that, Bruce?
Absolutely, because what is the placebo effect? It's a belief. It's a belief that whatever I'm doing is going to heal me. And this is absolutely true. As a matter of fact, almost all of medical healing, be it drugs or surgery even, turns out to be really a consequence of the belief of the patient that this therapy or this drug is going to heal me. So most of the larger percentage of healing in conventional medicine is the placebo effect. It's the positive belief that changes the chemistry of the body. Remember, the mind is going to release chemistry that matches the belief. If there's a belief of healing, then the mind will cause the brain to release the chemistry that causes the body to heal. Now, this is really important, Danny, because while everyone out there is familiar with the so-called placebo effect, what they're not familiar with is something that is much more profoundly important, and that is this. It's called the nocebo effect. The nocebo effect is the consequence of negative thinking. The point is simply this. Positive thinking and negative thinking are equally powerful in controlling your life, except they work in opposite directions. Positive thinking can heal a sick body, and negative thinking can make a healthy body into a sick body. As a matter of fact, negative thinking can kill you. And so why this is important is because, well, everybody focuses on the consequence of positive thinking. And I go, yeah, but most of the thoughts, as psychologists will tell you, that are in the subconscious mind are not positive thoughts, they're negative thoughts. And that means 95% of the day, you're actually unconsciously manifesting the experiences of negative thinking, which takes away your health and your happiness. This is the issue we have to deal with. So we can use the placebo effect, and any way you get to it is most important. I don't care if you take the drug or whatever it is, or if you do a seance, I don't really care. Basically, because it says, look, the healing came from your mind with entertaining the belief that you're capable and powerful enough to heal yourself. That's where the healing comes from. And what we have to recognize is, yeah, but 95% of our life is not controlled by a mind that has more positive beliefs in it. The subconscious mind has more negative beliefs in it. And therefore, our lives are seemingly to us out of our control. That I say, no, that's just your unconscious mind leading you to the edge of ruin, and really have to work on it. So it's interesting because in the philosophy of chiropractic, chiropractic uses a term called a subluxation, meaning that there's an interference with the nerves which are controlling the body. And the original founder of chiropractic, D.D. Palmer, said there were three causes of subluxation. One, trauma, like you fall off the curb and you wrench your back and cause your spinal cord to be twisted or interfered with, so nerves are not sending the information clearly to the body and distorting the signal, and the distortion of the signal leads to ill health. So trauma is one cause. Number two, and this should excite you, Danny, number two cause of subluxation is toxins, meaning simply this. If you put the wrong chemistry into your body, and the chemistry is involved with signaling between the brain and the cells, then the wrong chemistry will distort the signaling and lead to an improper signaling, which is then a consequence or leads to a subluxation, a problem in our biology. And the third cause of subluxation, so the first is trauma, the second is toxins, and the third, and this was way back in 1895, D.D. Palmer said thought. Thought is the cause of subluxation. And this is exactly right, because it's the mind and its thoughts. If the thoughts are not whole or healthy or supportive, then by definition, the thoughts are releasing chemistry that are undermining your health. And changing your thoughts and your beliefs are a way out of the problem. So by definition, a chiropractor should be concerned with the physical adjustment of a body that is traumatized. A chiropractor should be totally concerned with the concept of nutrition, because nutrition means putting the right chemistry into your body enhances the culture medium. Simple point. When I was in a laboratory creating culture medium for my cells, I didn't buy my chemistry at Kmart or some cheap discount store. When I created culture medium for the cells, I bought the best nutritional elements that I could put into the culture medium to give the cells the best opportunity. And why is this relevant? Is because we create the culture medium, blood. we create the composition of the signals from our mind, which is sending signals in the blood. But we also create the nutritional of the blood by what we eat. And therefore, it becomes incumbent upon us to recognize that we should be eating as healthily as you possibly can to create the healthiest growth medium, blood, that you can. And that really means keeping away from industrial farm food and or eating organic, eating healthy, eating balanced. These are very critical to make sure that your culture medium, remember the culture medium controls the fate of the cells. Eating nutritionally correctly is really important to assure that the culture medium is fully supportive of your biology. And lastly, your thoughts. Negative thoughts release chemistry that results in a negative experience. And we have to understand that these thoughts, we have to change our thoughts. And this is why I emphasize so much, only 5% of our thoughts from our conscious creative mind are actually running our life. The unconscious thoughts control us 95% of the time, but those unconscious thoughts are programs that we got from other people. And until we change those programs, they operate day and night 95% of the time, and that determines your life. So like Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, said, look, I don't care what your thoughts and wishes are. If you grew up in a rich family, your unconscious mind will allow you to keep that. And if you grew up in a poor family, no matter how much you want to be rich, the disempowering thoughts of derived from a poor family will always undermine you. So changing our beliefs is the third way of avoiding subluxations or interference with our biology. So the work that you do, Danny, involves physically adjusting trauma, changing the concept of nutrition so that we don't pollute our body with toxins. And it's also your work with helping people change the belief about who they are and what they're capable of doing.
Fantastic knowledge of chiropractic there, Bruce. Good on you. And one thing I would add to that, which basically says what you've said in a different way, eat well, move well, think well, and we will be well, isn't it?
That's it. That's the key. And if people can just recognize this one fact that we talked about, that is the most important understanding, and that is this. 95% of your life is coming from the invisible programming that you acquired in your first 7 years of life. Knowing that it's invisible is really important for a simple reason. If I get up in the morning and say, I'm going out to make a success of my life, I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to get healthy, I'm going to find a great relationship, and I'm going to have a great job. I say, great, this is creative thinking from conscious mind. This is good. You go out into the world, you come home at 5 o'clock in the evening, and you go, oh, it didn't work. No matter how much my efforts were, I never got there. And then why is this relevant? Because almost all of the population in experiencing something like this will say, well, it wasn't me. It's the world is against me. Why? I was the one that had the positive wishes and it didn't happen. And I go, that's the problem. If 95% of our behavior is invisible and it comes from mainly from other people, then we are shooting ourselves in the foot and not knowing we're doing it. And if we don't see we're involved, then we buy into, I am a victim of life. And the fact was, no, you were unconsciously creating a victim from the programming. And the relevance is, if you understand this, you can rewrite that programming and you could have all those wonderful things. You could have that honeymoon that lasts every day of your life for as long as you live on this planet. You will be able to find that relationship. You'll be able to stay healthy and maintain your weight, all these other things, when you change the programming. So the hardest part for the new science for me to relate to people is simply this. The new science emphasizes personal responsibility. And without the knowledge I talked about, nobody could understand personal responsibility. But now if I explain the knowledge that, well, it's your own behavior that was invisibly and unconsciously sabotaging you, then you can say, yeah, but I'm the one that can change that. And I go, precisely. And if you change it, you become the master of your life and you will manifest those wishes and desires that you hold in your heart.
Some amazing insights, Bruce.
Danny, yeah, I just wanted this, just to conclude with this, if I could, because I wanted to acknowledge you for the work that you're doing, because this is the most important kind of work on this world today, is to wake people up to their own empowerment. And I just wanted to congratulate you for your efforts, because indeed this is the source of health and happiness, is the information that you provide.
Well, thanks very much, mate. I appreciate that. And I even more so appreciate you taking out time to be with us today. I thank you on behalf of everybody that will ever listen to this, mate. It's much appreciated.
I thank you. And I thank the audience out there, because this is my mission statement. When people are in love, it's contagious. Even people who are not in love, when they see people in love, they can experience it themselves. So when people get healthy and happy and get in love, the more people that do that, the more the planet will actually manifest the experience of heaven on earth. And so that comes from the listeners of your program and the people that attend your workshops, Danny. And I want to thank them, because these are people that are saying, I want to take back power over my life, and I appreciate you offering them that opportunity.
Excellent stuff. Is there some way you'd like to send some people online to check out and learn a bit more about yourself, Bruce?
Yeah, very simply, my website, which is so simple, brucelipton.com. And there's lots of information that's downloadable there, so you can get deeper into the story I was talking about by going to that website.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Bruce.
Thank you, Danny.
You've been listening to Dr. Danny Scarhill on the Total Health Transformation Podcast, helping you to eat, move, and think on purpose. See you on our next episode.